You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
So, David Duford, welcome, welcome, welcome to Hooked on Startups.
Thank you.
That's it. That's it. The interview's over now.
It was great.
Very short. I mean, time is money and all that sort of thing.
Right. Appreciate it.
I gather that you are a bit of an influencer in the insurance space.
That's correct. Yes. Everybody knows me. I'm a celebrity that, well, nobody knows, I guess.
Well, that's fine. David, we're going to change that right now.
All right. I knew it came to the right podcast.
At least a dozen more people are going to know your name.
Hey, that's good for me. I'll take it.
And that's, I mean, that's the important thing. So I used to sell insurance. My first job leaving university was working as a life insurance salesman for Ensley Insurance.
Knife insurance.
Life insurance. And we used to call it wife.
Oh, I thought you said like knife, you know?
Okay. Well, it's the same sort of thing, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, knife and all sorts of blunt instruments.
True.
Insurance. Otherwise known as wife insurance.
Ensley is in where? Where
it was in England.
Is that in the UK?
It was a student.
Okay.
So I was involved in selling life insurance products to students.
Okay.
Who were like, you know, what am I going to do with this? I don't know. Just sign here, you know.
Right.
And all the tutors and all that sort of stuff. But I had a fantastic time. And I remember driving around. I mean, this interview is all about me, by the way. So if you get a word in
Hey, you know, whatever.
But I remember a great team of people. Great. I mean, we were in our early 20s.
Right.
And, you know, some fantastic, fantastic times. But so how did you fall into the, because you're a bit of a fitness nut. So, and I saw one of your aims, I remember reading on your website, was to lift something like 3/4 of a ton, something like that, with one finger. And twirl it around your head.
Maybe.
Defying the laws of gravity.
Yes, right, exactly.
So just tell me, what led you to insurance?
Yeah, desperation. I'm sure
And the insurance industry welcomes you with open arms.
Right. I mean, if you got a pulse, you're already got a job and you don't know what selling insurance really.
Yeah, but also it's really hard being, you know, you can be an insurance agent, but being a good insurance agent is really difficult.
It is. There's a lot. You're really in business. It's really the way to think about it. You're an agent of a company, but you're really running an agency. You're of your own, which means running a business, you have to deal with sales, administration, prospecting, client service, follow-up, et cetera. And that's tough. A lot of people fail out of the business. But if you have a knack for it, it's good.
I mean, do you think it's a bit like when people say, I can be a realtor. All I've got to do is, you know, I can be an insurance agent. So, and is that the pathway that you followed, really, when you suddenly realized, hang on a second, you know, A, this is actually quite difficult to be good at it. But B, there's actually a business here because if I can find out how this thing works, there must be other people like me who could benefit from that. And tell me more about what I got all these questions. I'm sorry. That's not the idea though. Tell me more about what your company does. And
so my company is DeFord Insurance Group. We train and recruit new agents and experienced agents to sell products called like final expense, burial insurance, Medicare supplemental policies, and then products like annuities.
Yes.
Targeting predominantly seniors, baby boomers. And the concepts are simple. We teach them a sales and marketing system, a business model, kind of like a franchise type of setup. And the agent takes that and does what they will with it, hopefully to go sell something. And I play the role of mentor, sales trainer, just assistant overall and helping them get up and running. And I duplicate that process as much as I can to find a few people that are kind of cut for the business and try to build them up.
Do they not get this training? What sort of training do you normally get from the firm? Because there are many firms, I think, that provide. So is that where the gap is? Is that the problem?
Yes. So your viewers, if they've ever looked at an insurance sales opportunity, or if they've ever had a friend approach them to sell insurance, it's likely they've had somebody try to simultaneously recruit them to sell insurance or to teach them how to recruit. There is a big influence in the insurance business of what I would call multi-level marketing. This is a direct sales hierarchy from an organizational standpoint. But the culture of MLM, just picture an MLM type of, you know, sales pitch you've been on and most people don't like it. That's very common in this business. And the problem is that the attention, where the attention is paid, is on building a downline. It's recruiting, how to recruit other people, not on how to sell insurance to other people. And so there's a big kind of just status quo of this is just a hypey type of MLM culture where so many people fail in part because they don't have the proper training to be successful. So I got in the business. My goal was to be the anti multi-level marketing type of agency, because to focus on selling.
There are some companies that have become enormous, huge through this MLM. And that's, I don't think you're right. I don't think it actually benefits anyone other than the owners of the company who I can't remember the name. Was it Pacific something or other? That probably narrows it down to a couple of thousand.
Right, yeah.
But I remember reading about this or talking to someone about this years ago, how this, the ability to recruit other people, all that happens though is that you don't end up building your own business. You end up relying on other people's efforts who themselves are relying on the people behind them or underneath them.
That's why you get a lot of, I don't think there's been an insurance company that's been an illegal pyramid scheme, but you get that accused a lot.
Yes.
And for good measure, because you will find commonly going into many of these organizations, the person recruiting your manager has never sold the first policy.
Yeah.
They've just drank the Kool-Aid that they're about to serve you. And you find you're really all alone. And you don't know where to turn.
And it kind of works. And what I found, again, was that you get this initial honeymoon period when you're when you start up, because you've got all the buzz and the enthusiasm of your new job, and you know you've got the framework, and then you normally got a group of people that you will approach first. So it's your friends, right, your family, and once you've exhausted those contacts, that's when you start thinking, God, yes, who am I? Is that so? That's when you realize actually that, you know, that's when the work begins really. So is that what you teach, how to sort of tell me a bit about the programs that you run and
sure,
you know, because there's all sorts of different sales methodologies and sure, how did you which ones do you think work best for you?
So we sell predominantly to we're like a B2C type of organization. Yeah. We're selling to consumers, right? So we go to Mr. and Mrs. Jones's house for a sit down one-on-one session. We do more telephone sales or virtual sales now in the past year with everything that's happened. And we do a one call close. We sit down, we build rapport, introduce ourselves, pre-qualify the prospect to see if they're even worth spending time with, if they can afford what we're offering, if they fit what we're trying to help them with. And then we demonstrate what our product does. We compare and contrast the other options out there. And then we close and handle objections. And it's all done in one call, including qualifying, because in the insurance business, just because you want it doesn't mean you get it. We got to make sure they're, from a health standpoint, eligible to get approved. So we qualify them on the spot and we get a decision and we're done. We leave. We're out of the door. It's one call close. And then we go on to the next one.
Yes. And has that become easier with COVID and the fact that now people aren't expecting someone to knock on the door, because the traditional sales process was building that rapport with someone, right, you know, because you're dealing with something that's actually quite fundamental. Has it become easier to scale, do you think, or?
No change. It's crazy. And the thing is, we deal with people who are predominantly 50 and older,
yep,
retired, disabled, health compromised in some way. And despite maybe the first month after COVID started, nobody knew what to expect. Nobody was flipping out. There's been no change. I had my best year as an agency last year. And I part of this too is when you're shown death all the time on the news, yeah, what do you think people are thinking top of mind? Dying.
Yes.
And some of them will come to the conclusion that maybe I should be prepared to die.
Is that what final expense insurance is?
Yes.
It's your last medical bill, because as you step off this mortal coil, you know, guess what? One of the benefits of being dead is you don't have any more medical bills.
Right. And so you got to pay to get in the ground or, you know, light the match and cremate you. And so death and taxes, right? So,
yeah. I mean, do you end up sort of, did you choose this particular sector? Because it's a grim sector. It's like, you know, it's one step removed from being a funeral director.
It is. I mean, like I said, I was desperate, right? And I like sales. I had a personal training gym prior to this, and I knew how to sell in a one-on-one scenario. And the reason I like this as a product is insurance. It's really a great opportunity, but there's a lot of obviously verticals or niches you can choose. And I chose final expense because it's a relatively simple concept to explain. Hey, you know, you're 70, you're going to die soon. So you should probably insure yourself because you don't want to pass that to your loved one. And people yes. get that, right?
Yes.
And it's an activity-based type of insurance. It's yes. not a technical sale where you have a long sales cycle. You're taking leads that you purchase. You're knocking on the door, calling to set an appointment. And again, now we sell over the phone for some agents as well. And we either close it today or we never close it, and then we move on. So it's very much oriented towards that kind of person that wants to get out there and hustle and not deal with it.
And you're right. And I think this is just, you know, the great thing about this really is that, A, you're embracing something that, you know, other people wouldn't have the common sense to sort of look at. Because
sure.
you know, I would imagine the sale is actually quite straightforward. It's quite matter of fact. I mean, and I guess the biggest challenge is probably trying to teach people to stop umming and ahhing and, you know, trying to avoid the fact and saying, well, you know, in the event that you know what I mean? Is that sort of, is it that piece? Is that the biggest challenge really with your sales guys that you train?
Well, there is a sense of just grimness to it, right? That a lot, and there's an old saying in this business from a famous insurance agent named Ben Feldman, Guinness World Book record of production and volume sold for many years. And he coined the term disturbing questions. Our job as an insurance agent is almost like an evangelizer. We got to go talk about, you know, you're going to die. Like, you don't want to ask these questions. It's going to make it real feel uncomfortable, but somebody's got to ask it because you got people who in your family are going to be responsible for this bill. So you got to get comfortable asking those questions, right? But, you know, it's funny too, you know, a lot of people are okay with this because life insurance is something that for most buyers, the idea to buy it is stemmed because of some inflection point earlier in their life. They lost a loved one or their spouse passed away and they saw the good of having insurance or what it was like not having it. And so they're very open in many cases to talking to you about it. Again, we're talking to older people, so death is more often on the mind and it's been experienced. So it's different than talking to somebody who's 30 and just, you know, I'm living. You know?
Bulletproof, yeah. And this is something that you chose. Is it this particular product, or after extensive market research and months spent, or just, you know, that seems like a
I had the benefit of doing some due diligence first. I researched the business. I never wanted to do it. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not like I was excited to do this. I just couldn't get a job anywhere else. And I like being an entrepreneur because I had if you've ever been an entrepreneur, it's hard to not be an entrepreneur and you're usually a dysfunctional employee. And so I didn't want to go work.
Listen, I think you're being far too humble here, David, because you know, you, even though one is desperate, you can still be desperate and do nothing. You can be desperate and sit there and watching YouTube all day, you know, crying into your cheese sandwiches, or you can do something about it. Now, So I don't think it was desperation. I think that moment may have been the moment that caused you to think, hang on, I need to take control of stuff.
I make light of it because insurance is, for most people, they regard it as boring and not a first career occupation, which I understand. And it certainly wasn't for me, but desperate times cause for desperate decisions. And you begin to look at things differently when you've got a mouse to feed and a wife and a kid like I had, and you start considering things.
Out of adversity comes, you know, whatever the word is.
Opportunity, yeah.
Opportunity.
That's certainly the case with me.
Exactly. So that's, and so this is the sector, as it were. So I would imagine that the companies selling this are probably pretty circumspect when it comes to the training, because it's like this product is, you know, go out and sell it. I mean, how does it work from a financial perspective? Because if you're insuring something that you know is going to happen, a bit like life insurance, presumably, how do the sort of the premiums work? Is it just you just pay each month until you drop dead and then obviously you stop paying?
Basically. Yeah. I mean, for this product, there's different whole life products or term life products you could use
to
form fit the need. But in this case, we need a product that's flexible with underwriting because a lot of our clients are older with health conditions and they've got to be accepted and they have to last forever versus, say, term insurance, which terminates at a later date may not be a good choice for our clients, because what if they don't have it when they need it because they outlived it, right?
Yeah, exactly,
very real risk.
No, I can really see the benefit of this, because it's one of those things, again, what you are trying to avoid, the problem that you're solving is someone, you know, obviously dying and then being in a position where there's all sorts of stuff that needs to be catered for, you know, funerals, tying up. And if they don't have a huge amount of money in their estate, you know, who's going to pay for that? And the burden is passed. So it's a great product. I can see that. I mean, but as I said, I'm just smiling to myself because I can imagine the sales process can be quite Monty Python-esque, in terms of, so you must have some great stories of people that you've trained or people that you've seen that were quite unexpected in terms of what's happened.
Yeah, I can share a couple. That's what's funny. You're dealing with the salt of the earth types here, right? Like, when you sell Final Expense, you're dealing with a working class clientele. You're not dealing with this, you know, stuffy white collar types. You're dealing with the people who make America run. And so you see all sorts of crazy stuff. I had a client who threatened to kill me and bury me in his backyard in Alabama. He still bought a policy from me. Interestingly enough, he died 3 years later. And there was a sign on his front lawn that said, anybody who walks on my property, their property or their person is, you know, will be shot.
Yes.
And I still ran the appointment because I just got off of sales feeling really good. I was like, screw it.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, I'm bulletproof. Yeah.
And he referred like some family friends. That's funny. So
I could, what do they say? Never trust a man who owns a backhoe.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Especially in Alabama, up in the mountains.
But I guess that's it. And what is your sort of recruitment numbers? Have you got people sort of slowly growing, or now that there's this sort of space, is word spreading throughout the insurance community?
Yeah. So, you know, the nice thing we have right now is a demographic confirmed trend that of 10 to 11,000 people turning 65 a day for the next 20 years. And what this represents overarching is a lifestyle shift. People are leaving work and entering retirement. And when you go through that transition, there's a change.
Yeah.
People start thinking about not accumulating wealth, but making sure it's still there long enough so they don't outlive their money. Or they start thinking about death seriously and having money set aside. And there's so many people coming into this baby boomer retirement age that it presents this multi-decade opportunity for a variety of products, Final Expense being one of them, to help somebody with defined needs. Because a lot of people are also retiring and they don't have any money, you know?
Yes.
And this is a product really built for those prospects that have very little savings or are worried because, you know, poverty is generational to an extent and their family usually isn't any better off.
Yep.
And they still want some dignity to handle something they feel is their responsibility.
Yeah. And these are all serious issues. These are issues that are not talked about in, you know, every day because they're not terribly sensational. It is, as you say, it's a necessity, it's salt of the earth, but you know, therein lies the opportunity. And I know that you're you've got a pretty big following on YouTube and in terms of as an accidental guru in this space. Are you finding that you're attracting the sort of the strangest sort of people? In other words, people that you would never expect would want to move into this industry?
No, I don't think of any of my agents, if they're strange.
I mean unexpected, in other words.
Yeah. You get people who are in their 50s and they would claim ageism has counted them out of work.
Yes.
And, you know, they're at a point where they can do this. The kids are moved out. They don't have as many financial obligations and they've always wanted to do this. And this is kind of their opportunity. You get people now, especially with any sort of recession.
Yes.
Where people stop working.
Yeah.
It's great for this business because what else you got to lose? They don't have a job. Kind of like I got into this in the Great Recession.
Yes.
And, you know, so it's, you do see an eclectic mix of people. Like I have agents who are top producers that came from training Tennessee walking horses back in the day that were medical device salespeople, ran companies before, flipped burgers. I mean, like it's such an interesting and diverse collection of people that stumble across, they stumble across it. Again, they're not out looking for it. They just find it after some random curiosity.
And how did you put your program together? So was it entirely based on your own personal experiences or did you draw from other, you know, because there are all sorts of different so-called professional sales, you know, processes. So how did you, because you've got three books that you've written on, you know, different insurance products. Sure. How did you assemble that?
Yeah, I mean, I started as an agent, of course, and I did well my first year, then progressively worsened and failed out of the business. Got back into it after working for corporate America and vowed I'd never make the same fundamental mistakes that I made kind of as an, you know, first year agent.
Yes.
And from that point on, about 2.5 years into the business, I started my agency, and it was strictly based around what my experiences were. And what I noticed at that point, like we talked about earlier, yes, there was a great opportunity for the trends, the demographics, et cetera. And also because most of the recruiting organizations out there were fixated on mass recruiting in an MLM fashion, not directly training agents to be self-sufficient producers that could make money on their own pen. And I just stuck to that principle, and I still do. And over time, I've been more interested in the business. There's been obviously aging people in and more awareness, and I've just kind of been there and doing my thing and sticking to what I do well, and people notice and start getting attraction. So,
Profile of the people that you're working with, has that changed over the last few years in terms of the profile of the people that you're training?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've always skewed, a lot of people are 50 and older.
Yes.
In the beginning, there was more of that. Now I am getting more that are younger than that. I've seen more women than I've ever seen.
Yes.
In the past year and a half. If I look at my YouTube stats, like 85% of my viewers are male and the other 15 are female.
Yes.
But it seems to me like a third to maybe even 40% of my new recruits are ladies.
Yes.
And that's unique. I don't know why that is. It's been interesting and it's certainly grown.
Yes.
But it's all people who are just really tired of working for somebody else. They want to set out on their own. They want to create their own freedom. Freedom's a big deal to them. They want to sell something that they can believe in too,
yes,
that actually helps people.
Yeah. And again, so I think what you're looking at really is providing people with fundamentally sound training.
Yes.
That is product independent, really, isn't it? So even though you have a number of products that your training is skewed towards, you know, this type of training is something that can grow with people and be applied to other products.
Absolutely. Sales is sales to an extent. That's part of the reason. You know, we started my business niched in final expense to begin with because it was what I know. But as I've grown in influence, we've brought on other products and trainers, like, for example, Medicare supplemental policies. It's a great opportunity as well, annuities as well. And you can take the same sales tactics and apply them to different products. The people are people.
Yes.
You know, there's a process of persuasion that no matter what you're selling works, you just got to fine tune it for the product. So yeah, there's definitely some overlap.
And what is the biggest mistake that you think that your sales guys make when they start?
Great question. Pre-qualifying, it's a big deal for us. So when we say pre-qualifying, what I'm referring to is figuring out if the prospect you're having a presentation with is actually a good candidate. Objectively, meaning not just like think or I feel, but objectively discerning whether or not your client's a qualified prospect or an unqualified, what we call suspect. And there's a series of specific questions, mostly open-ended questions that we ask to discern the level of desire. Do they really want it? Do they need it? Need is important for what we sell. And then there's some other factors like, can they medically qualify? Will they allow us to set up a bank draft? And what's their budget that they can absolutely positively for it. It's not necessarily what we'll sell them down to the dollar, but we need to know that, yes, they're willing to pay money.
Yes.
And a lot of agents pass it up because, like we talked about earlier, they're questions they don't want to ask. Like, God forbid, if you die tomorrow, Mr. Jones, what happens?
Yes.
That's a disturbing question to ask a stranger you just met 10 minutes ago.
Yes.
But it tells you so much about where they're at. Is this something of interest to them? Do they really need it? And that kind of questioning builds all the urgency and desire, if it's there to begin with, from the client. And it makes them self-obvious that this is something I need,
yes,
if they actually need it.
Yes.
But so many don't want to ask those tough questions. They want to just skip to the fun part. Here's how this product works versus that. And spend all this time presenting to somebody that doesn't really have the need or the desire for it. And that's frustrating. And so we work a lot on pre-qualifying for that.
It's funny how selling has changed over the years, because I remember going on a sales course you know, a long time ago with Pitney Bowes, and it was all talking about, you know, features, functions, benefits.
Yes.
And there was never any real discussion about identifying need. Yes. And then I think there's, you know, the sales processes have evolved and you've got various methods. I think the Sandler method, is that one? That's,
yeah.
You know,
people across. Have accused, in a good way, what I do is kind of similar to that Sandler approach.
But so, the Sandler, but these approaches work because they're needs based. And they talk about, you know, the pain, what is the pain in the, and I think that's a fundamental point, because businesses succeed if they satisfy, or if they solve a problem. Right. And, you know, what you're doing is you're identifying to that person that there is a problem. You're not creating the problem. You're just, you're getting them to articulate their problem. And I think that's half the battle, really, isn't it? Is getting the person to hear themselves say what they need.
You know, nobody's going to sell something better than yourself hearing yourself say that you need this and this is of urgency. And that's kind of what we're trying to get them to do, is give them enough rope to hang themselves. So they're like, yes, this, I need it. It's obvious. But there's something it's powerful to convince yourself. You're getting more power by convincing yourself than having a third party tell you need it, I think.
Yes.
And your manner of questions can get you that.
Do you find that as you spend more time doing this, that it's actually a lot simpler in terms of psychology and process than many people make out? People have made fortunes teaching people how to sell with extensive, complex programs where you, if your client says one thing, you must say another.
Right.
How do you feel? Do you feel that the sales process is simpler now that you spend more time, or does it get more complex as you dig deeper into it?
I think any master communicator will understand that their goal is to make the complex simple. That's what we try to do in our presentation. Teaching it to the agents as well as the presentation we give to the clients. But yeah, it's really simple. If I could just describe what a good sales presentation consists of, you have to have some connection with the prospect to lower their guard enough that they're open to what you're presenting, building rapport, some kind of trust. You've got to set an agenda so the client understands where things are going to go to, so they understand kind of what the purpose of them being there really is. Then you've got to know how to figure out if the client is a good fit. And that's largely based off of asking what I believe are open-ended series of questions that give you 2 to 3 levels lower in the what it is that's really driving them, to help them, like you said, not create. We call it creating a need. We don't create need.
Yes.
We uncover a need.
Yes.
Maybe one they didn't know they had, but by a base of question, open-ended question. Then it's really just showing them there is a place for features and benefits. We'd like to compare ourselves to the competition. Luckily, in our business, the competition really does suck. Yeah. So we show them the fine print and the terrible outcomes of buying. And then we just say, hey, which one you want? I mean, it's a real simple. It's not, we don't do 100 different closings. Like, all that stuff it's nonsense. We only use one close. I've sold over 1,500 final expense plans as an agent.
Yes.
And I only did which one of these good, better, best type of approach. Which one of these you want to go with today?
Yes.
It's that easy. I mean, it's not that easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. Let me put it that way.
And what do you find people have a problem with just hanging on to clients? In other words, not being able to accept no as a valid answer, or not wanting to hear no.
I've never found that as much of a problem as helping agents embrace that, you know, there's safety in numbers. The other big problem we have is doing enough activity.
Yeah.
It's running enough appointments and helping the agent understand that until you hit 15 completed appointments a week, you're going to have ups and downs of significance in your production.
Yes.
It's so often that we see agents who, when they are averaging 15 a week of completed presentations, they're consistent.
Two a day, isn't it? Roughly. Or three a day.
Not that much.
Yeah.
You know, but the fear in our business, again, we're running a business as much as selling insurance. For our strategy to work, they have to invest in lead programs that we risk. And whenever you do that, there's a psychology. Well, geez, that's money I could spend on something else. Or what if this doesn't work? I'm just going to get the cheaper leads. The less quality leads is really what that translates to. And then they have problems. So we try to encourage our agents to understand, if you want safety and security and consistency, which we all do in this business, it's really found more in going all in to have the activity to run those appointments than, you know, just barely getting enough and not having the volume to realize what the potential is.
Is that the biggest sort of reason for fallout? In other words, people that, that don't make it, is it lack of activity that's maybe driven by not getting enough good leads? But is it really, what would you say the biggest reason for people not being able to make it past like the 3 month threshold, as it were?
Cash flow is probably a big one. Again, this is unique to our model, which relates back to they don't have a marketing method that they can make work, you know, or prospecting method. So that's a big one, is running out of money. Number two is probably picking the wrong agents, rips people, that people show off their money, their Ferraris, you know, the whole bit.
Yes.
It's part and parcel in this business, dime a dozen. And people get, you know, seduced by it. And they think that's what they're getting into, but then what they actually get versus what they were sold on is completely different. So there's this misalignment in what the agency does versus what they say they were going to do, and the agent fails that way. And at very few people, we did a survey on, we surveyed like 104 failed agents, and very few said they quit the business or they failed because it was a wrong fit, which is sad. You know, it was either a money issue, meaning a prospecting issue at the base level,
yes,
or they went to the wrong agency and they just didn't know what they were getting into. They didn't do their diligence.
And you can help them with all that. I mean, I suppose the more people you have in the, and the bigger community that you build, then you've got this safety in numbers where you can say, ah, now I know you feel like you're about to run out of money, but it's always, you know, what do they say? You know, it's always darkest just before dawn. So if you continue, if you continue on this, this process, then something will happen. It's just the law of nature. If you put the effort in on one side and do the numbers, do the calls, then they will close.
Yeah. And there's always an essence of a faith argument to make here. You know, nobody can tell you that you're going to be successful in this business. That would be a lie. You have to take a leap of faith and you have to give yourself all that you can to give yourself a chance. It may not work out. But many a times the reasons it doesn't work out is because the agent just didn't do everything necessary to be successful. And look, if you want anything in extraordinary in life, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to do something extraordinary. Yes. You got to go out of the ordinary. And that means paying a price to be successful. And those many gurus said that's the case. And it is. I've found it out personally. There's a sacrifice.
And also, I was talking to someone earlier today and we were talking about faith in yourself and how you've got to take that leap. And one of the interesting things he said was that, which I agree with, which is success breeds success. So once you've got those first few deals, that gives you the power to sort of, gives you a bit more resilience. And I suppose, is it got all this stuff to share? How do you actually chop this up and deliver it in ways that resonate with people?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult task, right? Because you're taking people who are moving in from employment to entrepreneurship, essentially, in many cases. And there's a lot of not just technical know-how to learn selling insurance, but also the mentality, the mindset that comes with being a business owner versus being an employee. And there's no perfect methodology. We follow the immersion method. I look at it this way. If you want to learn Spanish, probably the best thing to do is, you know, airdrop yourself into Mexico City, and 6 to 12 months later, you're probably going to learn Spanish really well, just by desire, by necessity.
Yeah.
So that's what we do with our training. Yeah. So we've got, now we don't just throw out agents to the wolves. We take a couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks tops, and go through a variety of training. We have a lot of self-study modules, connection to me, ask me questions, one-on-one basis. But there comes a time when you got to pull the trigger. You got to go out there and do something, because that's where the real learning happens.
Yes.
You can only get so ready preparing, and then you've got to go test it, see what it does for you, get some feedback, and learn through action. So, but we don't want to, again, a lot of agencies, here's the book, here's the script, start calling. It's like, what about the products? What about the people? What about this? There is room to prepare for that, but there comes a day where you still have to go out there and pick up the phone or knock on a door.
And how do you scale your business then? So, to maintain that same connection, because people are buying into this program because of you. How do you, what sort of challenges are you facing, you know, which come from the success of your company?
Yeah, it's great. Cause I remember when I had 20 agents after a year and I was thrilled, and I recruit 80 plus a month now. And it's a sales process. So I have to qualify my applicants, if you will, my agents that much more. For example, I require my agents to invest money of their own into a lead program. If they can't invest money into the leads, they don't get to join. And it's no other reason than you don't really have a business unless you have a marketing plan.
Well, you want to set yourself out for success, don't you?
Exactly. Yes. The other thing I don't do, I don't put my phone number out publicly, which is kind of strange. But the reason is I'm very service driven, training driven. My people and my agency are my number one concern. What I don't want to do is have outsiders who haven't gone through and been vetted direct access to me.
Yes.
So I force people to jump through hoops, which actually is a qualifier in itself because it shows that they can follow directions. It shows that they can be patient. These are all character traits we're looking for in good agents.
Yes.
And that saves me a ton of time too. Yes. Now I'm at the point in my business where I'm looking to hire some assistants to aid with the onboarding because things have been great for us. So, you know, but it's just this constant revisiting the process, the funnel, if you will.
Yes.
Seeing what works and then tinkering with it to free up some time here and time there, you know, give someone else responsibilities. And as things get busier and busier.
And it's funny, I know of a handful of companies that have started out by growing this distribution base, which is incredibly valuable to an insurance company to have an effective distribution arm. Do you see yourself, you know, becoming not an insurance company, but becoming very closely allied? So, you know, rather than just focusing on individuals and giving them the choice who they work with, you provide the entire package. And that could create a, you know, an incredibly valuable buyout opportunity for you.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking like, geez, I want to beat my dad. He retired at 46. Maybe I can get it done in 10 years. I don't know. But yeah, no, seriously though, that's kind of an interesting thing that's happened. You know, as your business grows, you kind of recognize circumstances of change. And I originally thought of myself as just a final expense agent, then an agency owner when I built my YouTube channel and social presence. But I realized it morphed into more of a influencer basis for all insurance sales. And what I've grown into is I'm a trusted person in this business. That's my perception. People follow what I say. And that's, you know, a thing of power. It's a thing to respect and appreciate. So I have the ability now for those people, for example, who don't want to sell final expense because for reasons they're just not attracted to it. Well, now we have opportunities with other types of business models, like, for example, Medicare and others. And that just expands my influence.
Yes.
And my ability to grow this distribution arm. But yeah, you're 100% right.
And I think the challenge there really is, I think the great thing about what you do is you speak from the heart. There's no, you know, there's no business, what's like mumbo. Do you know what I mean? The sort of the business, let's run it up the flagpole and see who salutes it type crap, you know? Yeah. So I think that genuine, direct, no holds barred stuff. I think the biggest challenge is making sure that you don't succumb to sort of corporateness and you don't, you know, sell your soul or dilute your, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think you're just,
well, you know, it's funny you mention that. Cause I think, and this is true for all, anybody who wants to be an influencer or be kind of a source of influence of any kind, this country, this world suffers from, we're in a crisis of trust. People just know and smell BS everywhere.
Yeah.
And people don't know who to trust, who to turn to, because for all sorts of reasons. And it's a problem. It's a problem of humanity, but it's just been magnified, I think, for many, many decades. And people are surprisingly refreshed to find somebody who speaks plainly, who doesn't BS them, jerk them around, sound like everybody else, show off all their stuff, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And with some people, not everybody, that resonates because that's what we all really want. We want to trust. It's being human. And if you can tap into that, there's power.
I completely agree with you. And the one thing I hate, though, is this concept of, you know, you have to be open to the point where you've got to. I'll ask you the question. What's your view on people who say, you know, but David, you've got to be vulnerable? That's my sort of pet hate with all of this, you know, social media trusting and influencer stuff, you know, this concept that you've got to create vulnerability. And I don't see that with you, frankly.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think or have an agenda in the sense of, you know, okay, what's the buzzwords? What do we have to do? Like now you're kind of selling out in a sense. And I think people will detect that.
Yeah.
That kind of fakeness. If I just do what I do and I don't care what people think.
Well, no, and that's the most beautiful thing.
In a way, that's weird. That sounds strange.
Yes.
But if you just do what you're going to do and you believe the way you're going to do, you're going to attract a certain person who is attracted to that.
Yes.
But if you sell out and you're fake and you're hooting and hollering and doing all the nonsense that's so common in our business, you know, you're going to attract people to it, but it's not going to be the kind of person that I think is a quality person.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, so yeah, I mean, I don't know. I get what you're saying for sure. Like just be yourself, and it's harder to do than you think for some people.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It is. It is. Cause everyone's so afraid of, you know, the, and it is so refreshing to meet you because you don't have, you can just tell you don't have any of those sort of, you know, the buzzwords or the predetermined agendas or the, you know, it's great. And that's why, you know, I'm sure that your business will do nothing other than grow at a furious rate to the point where you will indeed retire well before the age of 46. But anyway, I've decided that now is the time to introduce the Hooked on Startups Quickfire Questionnaire, just to sort of, you know, ruin everything.
I'm ready.
Are you ready for this, David Duford?
Go for it.
Did you have any idea? All right. Question number one. What is your favorite word?
Bullshit.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Number two. What is your least favorite word?
Man, there's so many I hate. Vulnerable.
Oh, yeah. Good. Thank you. Yes. Extra points for that one. Right. Question number three. What are you most excited about right now?
Oh boy, just everything. I mean, every day is just getting better and better. I'm excited about the next day. Life is good.
Yes. Excellent. And number four, what turns you off right now?
You know, such simple questions.
I know. I didn't think of them. They're not mine. That's why they're so good.
Do people rapidly answer this normally? Or they I think,
well, some prepare beforehand and others is much more fun.
So you can obviously tell which one's prepared.
Well, no, but you don't want that. You don't want this sort of preparation because then it sounds,
Yeah. What do I hate the most right now?
Yeah. What turns you off right now? Yeah.
I don't know.
It could be mac and cheese or something. I don't know.
Jeez, I don't know.
I'm going to wait here until
this new Biden tax plan. I mean, does that count? I mean, I don't like the idea of getting taxed. Yes. But
I'm sure you and several million other Americans would sort of raise a fist and salute and go, yes. Question number five. What sound or noise do you love?
I can play it for you. I got one. I can load it up right here. It's a lady that we triple dial on the phone to get people. So we call our clients. They don't pick up, right? Nobody picks the phone up. So you got to do what's called triple dialing, right? And you drive them nuts by the third time they pick up, right? And they're like, what's going on? What do you want? And then you do your pitch and they're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I sent that card in. Yeah, let's talk insurance, right?
Fantastic.
So I got this recording and she goes, the guy triple dials and she goes, hello. And she just screams into it. It's hilarious if you listen to it. I did a bad job of it. So.
No, yes, definitely. We should have that. I'll tell you what, there needs to be a link on your website to the famous triple dial hello woman.
Okay.
So next question. What sound or noise do you hate?
Oh, whining, complaining, you know, excuses, the sound of excuse and whining.
Yeah. You know, it's coming, you know,
yeah.
Number seven. I think you'll enjoy this. What is your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It is. Yeah. And the way you deliver it. I'm sorry. Each person that says that delivers it in an entirely unique way.
Is that right? Really? Is that what most people say? Is that?
Yeah, no. It is. It is exactly. I mean, there are some people who like to plead the fifth, which is entirely their right.
Oh, bullshit. There's my second favorite word.
My favorite comes from Four Weddings and a Funeral, where I can't remember the name of the leading actor, but he goes, oh, fuckity fuck. Which so it is great. So anyway, next question, number eight. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I think I would have made a good attorney.
I think so, actually. I think you would have scared the pants off the defense. I think you would have been, would you be defense or prosecution?
I would be a defense. Really? I am a devil's advocate.
Yeah, that I think I see that. I see, you know, just you standing up and just before you rest for the defense, you drop in this little phrase that suddenly turns the case on its head.
Right, right.
You know, and then flashing lights and much to the applause. Anyway, that's just my imagination running riot. Question number nine. What profession would you not like to attempt?
probably something like some bean counting, accounting type of thing. That would be terrible. Just something boring and
desk based. Yes.
Yeah. That's terrible.
I mean, to many people, that is the definition of hell, but to others,
yeah,
it is purgatory. What they live for. Isn't that funny? That's what makes a market.
That's right.
The final question, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
It's nice to have you. You made it.
David, it's been such a pleasure having you on. My final question, how do people get hold of you? How do they learn more about this, you know, this fantastic amount of knowledge that you've got, and how do they hook into your program?
Well, thanks for having me, Matthew. Real quick, two places to go. You can go to my website, daviddufour.com. Just check out everything there if you want to learn more about how my agency works. Really, I think the best way, though, to learn about me on a more personal level and kind of all the information we have is go to YouTube and just put my name in, David Dufour, D-U-F-O-R-D, and start watching some videos and go down that rabbit hole.
That's fantastic. Yes. David, thanks again for being a brilliant guest. I can't wait to, look at all your stuff and follow your progress, and hopefully have you back on again, sometime very soon.
Yeah. Thanks, Matthew. Enjoyed it.